Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" It's a funny question. There was a time when this was the temptation offered to Jesus. The three other Gospels mention that this happened within or at the end of the 40 days of fasting in the wilderness. The three temptations of gaining wealth, status, and power. These three are what kings have. And for each of these temptations, Jesus resisted. The shipwrecking image in Chittagong, Bangladesh, is one of Edward Bertinsky's disturbingly beautiful manufactured landscapes. The danger of single-hulled ships was revealed after the Exxon Valdez oil spill and insurance companies were refusing to cover them after 2004. So a huge decommissioning of these single-hull tankers and these ships were sent for recycling to Alang, India, and Chittagong, Bangladesh. The photographer Bertinsky noted harsh conditions and that the process of shipbreaking in this place was that the workers had no technology other than a cutting torch and whatever else they could find on the boats. Everything available came in the form of motors, wrenches, and cables, and then the workers' bare hands. Workers wore flip-flops. They were losing their eyesight because there were no welder's helmet, let alone one with a filter shade. They were injuring themselves, losing limbs, where sites reported 2 deaths each day. In Ed Bertinsky's Anthropocene, I think one of the shows was at the AGO a few years ago, we are faced with human impact on the Earth's geology, ecosystems, and climate change, and on the invisible, disposable people. In this situation, someone held rein to make these disturbing situations happen. Someone had the wealth, the status, and the power to build, to ship this oil, and then to decommission these same ships. In Samuel, we read that the people demanded that they had to be given kings, just as their neighbors have kings. In agreeing to appoint a king, Samuel gave warnings about what a king's governance is about. "He will take your sons and assign them to his chariots and horses, and they will run before his chariot. He will appoint from among them his commanders of thousands and of hundreds. He will make them do his plowing and harvesting and produce his weapons of war and chariotry. He will use your daughters as perfumers, cooks, and bakers. He will take your best fields, vineyards, and olive groves and give them to his servants. He will tithe your crops and grape harvests to give to his officials and his servants. He will take your male and female slaves, as well as your best oxen and donkeys, and use them to do his work. He will also tithe your flocks. As for you, you will become his slaves. My earliest memory was that of my parents' hushed conversations while they grieved the death of one of my brothers born in 1956 with an enlarged liver and did not live past a day. I recalled them also talking about the births they were beginning to hear and read about the Marshall Islands, of babies being born with no limbs, of babies that were like jellyfish, born with no skeletons. These were the results of nuclear testing by a very powerful country at Bikini Atoll. I wondered then that if a country so powerful and so rich that can produce such awe and destruction, why they never used this power to bring these babies back to life. Reverend Tafue Lusama, who was the General Secretary of the Congregational Christian Church of Tuvalu, a series of 8 islands in the South Pacific, often speaks at the United Nations conferences on what is happening to his homeland. Since he was young, he has observed, and it has been documented, that the islands are slowly being submerged into the sea. The water table is filled with salt and is killing the vegetation and other plants that support life on the islands. Within 30 to 50 years, they will be gone, or at least uninhabitable. Children grow up wondering where they will live. Bishop Sophie Peterson, who is an Inuit and the second female bishop in the Danish Lutheran Church serving Greenland, told about how Greenland observes the melting of glaciers and icebergs around them. The warming causes the permafrost to melt, and that compromises the structure of their houses as they sink or sag with the thawing ground. Melting permafrost and rising seawater. COP26 was convened at the end of a year that saw multiple unprecedented climate-induced natural disasters in the global north, extreme wildfires and a deadly heat dome in BC, severe drought in the prairies, flooding in Germany and Belgium, and a tropical cyclone hitting Australia, that some thought might provoke a shift in perspective among the world's wealthiest nations. Perhaps the plagues that hit Pharaoh would provoke a shift in perspective and let the people go. But the responses are still the same. Why are they poor? It is because they are lazy and do not want to work. They have resources they do not even care to extract. A mining company recently sent a team of anthropologists to understand the life and culture of Aetas, the indigenous people who live at various slopes of Mount Pinatubo and survived the volcano's 1991 eruptions. The company was offering employment prospects, but the people remember the elders who said that the volcano was upset because of the extractive activities that disturbed the land, with wastes from the mines that drained down to the rivers and towns below. They used these areas for recreation, hunting, source of materials for weddings, and medicinal herbs. Those areas are important to us. Our elders have warned us against punishments and curse. I don't know what anthropology means, but these are what I know about our place. So the company was offering employment prospects so people can be settled. Mining companies would often bring extensive capital for their extractive practices. This capital would be seen as an investment or a debt owed to them by countries who suddenly was enriched with employment for their people. And while the employment is dangerous and not really paying well, the debt must be paid and structural adjustments applied. The debt grows and persons are born already in debt. Canadian companies account for half of the world's mining and exploration activity. They are active in 8,000 places in over 100 countries globally. Canadian mining assets abroad are worth $150 billion. And in some cases, the budgets of these companies are bigger than the countries in which they mine. In social service terms, settlement is what is offered to those who just arrived, whether they came in as immigrants or refugees. Settlement will include housing, information on where to get language training, where to get food, furniture, daycare, education, or accreditation for education to be qualified to get an occupation, a job, so they can really be settled. There was a song that went like this. Because he gets up in the morning and he goes to work at 9. And he comes back home at 5:30, gets the same train every time. Because his world is built around punctuality, it never fails. And he's oh so good. And he's oh so fine. And he's oh so healthy in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, doing the best things so conservatively. That is a well-respected, well-settled man. To be settled is to be well-placed, profiting well, and being successful in the business of making money. In Daniel, we read, the court sat in judgment and the books were opened. And then we read, Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty of homicide, attempted homicide, and reckless endangerment by a Wisconsin jury on November 19, following a trial that lasted nearly 2 weeks. He's a well-respected man. He was only defending himself from the rioters and the looters, even if the only persons killed were those he shot. Oh, Olivia, whose story is in a video in the church's campaign for a guaranteed livable income, is that of a woman who came to this country as a domestic worker. And after she fulfilled the obligations to get landed status, the degree she received in her birth country is not recognized in this country. And so she must upgrade herself, get into debt with OSAP, and with her diploma, now works three jobs in order to simply pay the rent and feed herself and her son. Our Canadian infrastructure does not recognize foreign earned degrees. Wouldn't it be nice if she received a guaranteed livable income that she needed not to work three jobs just to feed herself and her son? There was another woman who wanted to get off social assistance. So she trained to become a PSW, that is a personal support worker. And she was so happy when she landed her first job. But she struggled with childcare, car fare, and clothes and special shoes she must wear in her new job. Her employer would only pay her to work part-time so as to not have to pay her benefits. So she found another job and cobbling two PSW jobs to make a living. And when COVID hit, the infrastructure required her to work for only one employer. Wouldn't it be nice if she received a guaranteed livable income instead? When I started at Davenport Perth, I was able to give a little honorariums for small tasks and check amounts of $20 to $50. I was surprised that people will cash these checks at the nearest money mart 20 cents off each dollar. As with others, I raged against these money mart places. And I asked them to explain why they went there. So they told me how difficult it was to open up a bank account. And even if they did, the bank never releases the check until a number of days later. And there was a sense of recognition with these stories when I heard of the story of an Indigenous grandfather and 12-year-old handcuffed in front of a Vancouver bank after trying to open an account. Maxwell Johnson and his 12-year-old granddaughter were handcuffed in front of a Bank of Montreal in Vancouver while trying to open up an account on December 20, 2020. Yet it is this banking system that is one of the infrastructures we have that gives the rest of us a sense of order and safety. It is what divides us from them. We, being well settled, knowing that life makes sense and God is well placed on heaven, presiding, but not bothering. Our lives as Christians is not that of settlement. The first followers of Jesus understood that, and they did not consider their positions to be their own, but rather held in common because they believed that they are all in this together. Ananias and Sapphira, they were upright leaders in the faith. they secretly withheld a portion of the proceeds of land they sold. Perhaps an insurance for a rainy day, when they can still be an us from them. Peter said that what they did was evil in the sight of God. In our constant dialogue with God, we are in our life of faith being securely oriented, then being painfully disoriented, and being surprisingly reoriented. We, being well settled, knowing that life makes sense and God is well placed in heaven, presiding but not bothering. But God continues to bother us. The king who we thought was going to take over from the powerful people on earth was a man who suffered alone while his followers were settled into sleep. He was betrayed by someone he broke bread with, denied 3 times by a man he called a rock. He was a man who resisted the temptation of wealth, power, and status. Yet among many miracles, he healed the sick, calmed the seas, and ate and drank with his friends. His love for women assured them that they need not be defined by the sons they bore, but by the hearing of the word of God. Pilate asked him, "So you are a king?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice. This is settling into the kingdom of Jesus." Amen.